Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikulskas, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books. My guest today is David Baldacci, the number one New York Times bestselling author who's out with his new novel, The Fallen. It's the fourth book in the Amos Decker series. Decker, of course, is the memory man. He's the FBI guy who, thanks to a football injury, has a medical condition known as perfect recall, generally. And this time, Decker and his colleague Alex Jamison travel to Barronville in western Pennsylvania to visit Alex's sister and her family. In the heart of the Rust Belt, Barronville used to be a mill and mining town. Now the economy's falling apart and the opioid crisis has taken over. While there, Decker stumbles onto a double homicide and then learns there have been a handful of deaths in the town, and Decker believes they may all be related, and the thrilling story unfolds from there. David, when you write a character with perfect recall, what particular challenges does that pose for you as the author when you try to get into Amos Decker's head?
Well, for one, I have to be really consistent. So, you know, I could say something, and he could see something earlier on in the book, and I had to make sure that I sort of put a pin in that, remember it. It's going to be important later on in his memory, because he remembers everything, he sees everything, so he's looking for inconsistencies, and he sort of has this template that he'll put down. Anything that comes up that, you know, A said something that contradicts what B said. So for me, it's really paying attention closely to the details, probably more so than I do in any other book. I mean, I pay attention to the details in all the books, but he takes me to another level just because of his perfect recall. I have to be perfect in that as well.
The town of Barronville is unfortunately like many any town USAs these days. As you created this fictional place, where did you turn for inspiration to develop it?
You know, my mother's family's from a Rust Belt town. It was coal mining for them. And a lot of places like this across America where towns were created, and I did this symbolically, in this book, John Barron found coal there, and you see in these Rust Belt towns, something valuable is found. It could be coal, it could be gold, it could be, you know, a fast river where you use that for power, and somebody builds a town, and they have workers who they need, so the workers come there, and they bring their families, and they build homes, and they have a lifestyle, and everything is going great, and the jobs are good until the coal runs out, or the steel goes away, or you can do it cheaper overseas, and then people who created the town or the companies pack up and leave and go someplace else, and they leave all the families behind. And they still have to make a living. They can't just uproot everybody and move. So it becomes sort of a desperate climate. And the opioid crisis sort of came in at the very worst time. It's kind of like a perfect storm for bad things because they call it the drug of despair. And people have no hope, no opportunities. They get hooked on these opioids, and the spiral becomes even faster and even deeper. So we see that across the United States. And I wanted to highlight that in this book because even though I write to entertain, I also try to write to inform.
When you captured the personalities of these blue-collar workers so well, and many of them are just struggling to make ends meet, and they can't move because they're trapped economically or because of family ties, do you feel the sympathy in their plight?
I absolutely do. I mean, these are all Americans. They're our fellow citizens. They're working hard. They're in the situation largely, you know, for things beyond their control. Look, capitalism is great. It lifts a lot of people out of poverty. It creates good jobs, homes, prosperity for all. But it also has a downside to it that, you know, companies are not in this to create jobs. Companies do this to make money. And if they can make money by sending their work somewhere else, they will do that, and they don't really care about the consequences of local communities. So I just saw this happen in my mom's community. I grew up in Richmond, Virginia, which really it was a town that was based on lots of things that no longer are relevant in life. The biggest employer back then was Philip Morris, a cigarette manufacturer. Their business has fallen off quite a bit, and except for a really great college down in Richmond. I'm not sure Richmond would be the city it is today, so they were lucky in that regard. They could have been a Rust Belt town as well, so I grew up in one that, you know, experiencing a lot of these same challenges, and I do have great sympathy, and we need to be aware of this, and we need to help. We can't move forward as a country until we solve this problem.
I learned a ton from this book. Not a ton, but a great amount about the life insurance industry. And I don't want to give away any spoilers, but what's your research like into the life insurance, which at first blush seems like a very boring thing to study?
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing, but the dollar amounts can be staggering, particularly when you're talking about a volume like that. And it's that part of the book for me was, it's, you know, some people who are trying to, as we said before, make a living, well, sometimes they turn to the dark side and they figure out loopholes in the systems where there's a lot of money at stake, and they can exploit those loopholes and obviously destroy a lot of lives in the same process, and they do it all for money, and they stick it in their pocket and off they go on to the next victim. And there was a lot of research, and I had to get it right, but 99% of the research that I did on that aspect of the plot I had to leave out. So you just see explanation here, a little bit of dialogue, a little bit of an expository paragraph there. Because I'm not writing a textbook. I don't want to interrupt the flow of the story. But it was important for me to get the details out so that people could follow along intelligently about where I was going with that part of the plot.
Well, you do that with a lot of the things you research, especially the medical stuff with the medical examiner and explaining how people die. I've heard people read like a Tom Clancy novel or whoever's writing those novels now and say, God, I skipped 100 pages because they were just explaining how the ship was built or the plane or something like that. Is that a craft that you've learned over the years as a writer to not put in too much detail to bog the reader down?
Absolutely. I call them flip books. When I go out and talk to people, I said, everybody who's read a flip book. Flip book is where a writer's done a lot of research, way too proud of it to leave any of it out, but doesn't want to take the time to integrate it, so he just kind of finds a spot in the book and sticks it there. And then you're reading the story, and you hit those pages, and you flip past those pages until you get back to the story, because you didn't need to know all that stuff in order to follow the story along, and it just blows the whole flow of the tale. So for me, it is less is more, and I work really hard to integrate that material into little bits and pieces here and there. Where my rule of thumb as a writer, and I tell this to aspiring writers, say in 10 words what it would be far easier to say in 100.
Well, in this book, well, we're talking to David Baldacci about his new book, The Fallen. It's the latest in his Amos Decker Memory Man series. You delve into these fulfillment centers, which spring up in many of these smaller communities around the country. Amazon has one just a few hours north of here in Shakopee, Minnesota. I was amazed to read how scientific the layout of these places is, combining human labor and robots. How'd you get up to speed on these places?
Yeah, I did a lot of research, and I visited some of these places. I read a lot about them. I've talked to people who work in them. It's almost like this is, you know, it's not as bad, but it's almost like it's 21st century kind of sweat labor where you are grilled on your productivity. It is relentless drive forward. I mean, Amazon delivers them, I don't know how many packages they ship to people. Everybody gets packages from Amazon, billions of them. Well, they have to get there somehow, and other companies like that. And so you've got human beings who are running 15 miles a day, you know, packaging thousands of packages every day with eyes on them all the time, having to work at the speed of a robot because a robot's working right next to you. And I don't think this is a good recipe for a sane life, quite frankly. But it seems to be like the biggest job employer in the country right now. And other companies, other states around the country are like, please come to us, build one of these centers, employ 10,000 people, you know, and they'll pay them $10 an hour, $12 an hour. But the pace is relentless. And at some point, as I intimated in the novel, the big, you know, these companies, they don't want to employ anybody. They just want to have the robots do all the work because they can make a lot more money. Although, as Decker pointed out in the book, he's like, well, if people don't have jobs, how are they going to buy all this crap?
Yeah, it's a catch-22. In this book, there's also law enforcement agencies working together here, local and federal, and the reader gets a sense of what it's like for cops to work in the town where they grew up. They know a lot of people. Do you think it's difficult, as you talk to law enforcement officers, to effectively serve a community where you have so many personal connections, as opposed to somebody who just moves there and only knows it on a professional level?
I think so. I think it's both a blessing and a curse. One good thing is that you know the people, you know the communities, you know maybe somebody's bad and they have been bad, and so you can kind of focus on that or at least know the lay of the land better. But the other thing is that sometimes when you have people you've known all your life and they turn bad and they're doing bad things, it's a lot more difficult than it would be if you were just a stranger to them. So, you know, do you go in and bust the old lady? Do you go in and take this business down? People you might have lived with your whole life, you might have grown up with their kids, their parents might be friends of yours. So it really is a two-edged sword, I found. And I don't know any local law enforcement has ever totally found the perfect way to approach that. It's a case-by-case basis. But it's a challenge every day because, particularly in this day and age when people, you know, they don't have a regular job and they have to turn to other means to support themselves. And, you know, it would be very difficult to go and bust an 80-year-old grandmother who's been selling opioid prescription pills, you know, on the street. And you might have gone to church with this lady or, you know, she might have babysat you when you were little and now you're within a restaurant taking her away. That's got to be hard.
You've written books that are set in real locations, Washington, D.C., for example. When you set a story in a fictional town like Barronville, what type of freedom do you feel as you write about a place you've created as opposed to some place where people can say, oh, I can go drive to this street or this intersection?
Yeah, but it's so sweet because they can't email me and tell me I got a fact wrong. So it's just a luxurious feeling for me because I made it all up. But I can really dictate the contours of the town and how I want it to be, which is great, too. And Barronville was a made-up town because I needed to have the founder of the town, you know, co- create this place so it can be an existing town, because that was a very important facet of the novel, as you know, having read it. And so for me, it was liberating at times. But the other flip side of it is I had to create everything. I couldn't just, you know, allude to something and people would know, oh, yeah, I know what he's talking about, because it really exists. So it took me a little more time to sort of build the stage, if you will, as I was developing the story.
What a beautiful stage it was, and it's a fantastic book. It's The Fallen by David Baldacci, the newest in the Amos Decker Memory Man series. It's available now wherever your fine books are sold from the good folks at Grand Central Publishing. David, fantastic new offering. Thanks for putting it out, and thanks for joining us today.
Hey, great. I enjoyed it as always. Thank you.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
Woman says these jobs are going, boys, and they ain't coming back to your home.